So you have a background in physics and computer science. Could you maybe say a little bit more about what initially drew your interest in sonification?
Okay, yes. So maybe the starting point is a much older background. My first language was music. I was drawn to music when I was at age 5, and it just was naturally. I loved the electronic organ that we had in our household, and I could read music and play music before I could read and write. And so, and electronics was fascinating me. And music, on the one hand, was some very important passion, and on the other hand, I was so fascinated by mathematics and physics. So there was a hard choice to see what I do as a professional career. And for some reason, it fell into physics. And so I studied physics, but after I completed that, I felt that this is for me a little bit too analytic. It is trying to isolate out more and more smaller things, elementary particles, the very small, and simplification of, and isolation of things. And I felt that what was missing was the synthesis, the holistic perspective, the understanding of the whole, the emergence of complexity out of little things. And so after my diploma in physics, I thought there's still something to be understood and learned, and that led me to neural networks, to the brain. And so I found a PhD in a neuroinformatics group, where the idea was to understand learning systems, to be very bio-inspired, and to take from complex systems such as neural networks and brains. And in this context, I had the opportunity to define my own research direction. This is very, very rare, and I'm very happy that I've given the possibility by Professor Helge Ritter from Bielefeld University. And so, in one of the data mining lectures, the topic was how actually do we understand complex structures? And visualization of data is an important vehicle in order to do that. And then we discussed, okay, well, visualization is rendering structure and data for the eyes, and that's valid because visual perception has a very broad bandwidth. But we can also hear very well. And could we cook up the high-dimensional data into something that can be heard? And that was immediately a fascinating idea for me. And then I went and looked and discovered that there is some research on auditory display and sonification. And I was it was possible that I established this research idea in Bielefeld, in which before there was no research on auditory display. So interesting that after an excursion into physics, I've been able to drag in the audio and the sound side of my life into my academic career.
Okay. Then could you tell me a bit more what you find so interesting in the sense of hearing? Like, how did you start like exploring more this, moving away from the visual and being directed into the auditory?
It is a little bit like a. There was an ideal petri shell in which something could grow. I could apply my creativity, and it was an area for discovery. I mean, at that time when I started, there was not so much research in auditory display. Basically, the iCAD auditory display community had it's was just founded in the early 90s, and I started my PhD in 97. So it was a very young and vibrant field. And so whatever you could tap in and sonify was mostly new. And so that was fascinating me, and so I've been very going into press and trying out everything, every possible sonification approach and different data sets. But what, in terms of listening to the data, is most fascinating is that it is putting elements which are usually distinct, if you think of visualizations, they put it into context. It provides a unity, some holistic, something which doesn't end at the surface. There is another quality coming in from listening to the data. And it's quite difficult to explain. But I found it very, very drawing me.
Okay. Could you maybe also explain sonification for also someone that doesn't have a background in computer science or physics, maybe in a few simple steps?
In very simple words, sonification is a process of transforming data, which is just a bunch of numbers, you could say, into a sound, but in a systematic and well-defined way, so that you can do it again with the same data and you get the same sound out. And as you have got variations in the data, you will have different corresponding variations in the sound, so that the sound serves as a pointer which is giving you, unlocking you information or patterns in the data. So it is a tool for understanding. So basically, in visual forms, you could say you've got paintings and visualizations. Both are color on a canvas, isn't it? But in audio, you could say you've got something like music and sonification. And both are structured audio material in time, but they serve different purposes. And the sonification emphasizes the functional side of audio, so that you can understand it.
Okay, so maybe you can give us a few examples of sonification in your work and how you have maybe collaborated with other people. How do you apply this knowledge that you have obtained from the process of sonification?
Mm-hmm. So broadly, application areas are maybe four or five applying sonification to monitor complex processes. That would be real-time sonification, where as data come in, they are represented by sound. And that can help, let's say, during production processes to beware of changes and then to react correspondingly. Let's say a nurse is in a monitoring station where epileptic children are observed, and usually they have to watch on lots of visual monitors and follow the data traces, and if there's some epileptic activity, they need to walk to the room of the child and do something, yeah? And this is visually very annoying, yeah? You need to focus and be concentrated all the time. And so sonification can, in this case, create an ambience like water fountains or like singing birds or whatever you could have in mind. And so in this ambience could be so that it doesn't disturb you or distract you so much. You can accept it as the soundscape at the moment, but if there's some systematic or dramatic change, your attention will be drawn to it. So that would be an example for the process monitoring use case. A second one would be interactive sonification, and that's something we are doing at the moment for physiotherapy. So if you are a patient and come to a physiotherapist, you get a practice, and in the session you usually get explained the correct execution of that practice. And then you go home and do the practice, and maybe you forget what really the point was and do it wrongly. And would it be cool if you would be just given a number of sensors, that variable sensors you can attach with a strap around your elbow or arm or where you, whatever you're doing. And then as you do the pattern repetitively, you would get a feedback whether you are doing it correct or not. And actually, since your body is oriented in different directions, a visual display is not very useful, but sound is perfect. So as you move your body, you get an auditory feedback. Let's say one possibility would be if you are doing everything correct as practiced in the session, then it would be just silent. And if you deviate from that corridor of correct execution, you would hear some noises like woo, woo, so like that. And the more extreme that sound is, the more you are off that corridor of correct execution. And that's something we are exploring at the moment in Bielefeld. And I think that's going to be very useful, not only for physiotherapy, but also for rehabilitation, for skill learning, and to master complex movement patterns that you would have, let's say, in dance, pirouette, or something like that.
Yeah, it seems that you...
I forgot something. Oh, that's only two. So, but there are many more, like applying auditory display for the visually impaired people, for instance, to replace what sighted people can easily see in a type of complex soundscape from which they can understand the visual environment and help them navigate the world, or to explore data that is difficult to comprehend by looking at it, like biomedical data, and from medical trained people to assist the diagnosis and differential diagnosis of pathologies from listening, and more and more, and such as awareness applications, for instance, how can sound help us to be more aware of our energy consumption patterns so that we have a sustainable HCI, a more sustainable way living in the world, because we are better informed about where and how many resources we are utilizing. So these are only a few examples, and there are even more.
Yeah, maybe like a question also related to that. You seem to suggest also from the beginning that like we're kind of dominated by a visual culture where everything is 2D, and you, I think you suggest that like with listening you move from the 2D to the 3D, like experiencing the world not just from a screen but going into like space in the sense that we understand also through our bodies. So I was wondering whether also in the examples that you gave, in the application that you had, whether there were any difficulties when trying to make that connect, that transformation maybe from 2D to 3D, when you were talking about basically also the data that you have are going to be like in graphs, right? So that's like a 2D representation, but then you're kind of transforming it into something else.
Actually, the data rarely is just 2D. Normally,
okay,
data sets can be 15-dimensional or 80-dimensional or whatever. Yeah, and the 2D graphs and scatter plots is just like the shadow cast from the data which live in this high-dimensional space onto a two-dimensional area.
Okay.
So it's like the caveman. Is it so Plato?
Yeah.
So the world is high-dimensional,
mm-hmm,
and we only can observe a two-dimensional shadow because our retina is two-dimensional.
Mm.
And then our brain is challenged to make up something higher dimensional from this these low-dimensional images. And so the brain has solved that pretty well by giving us two eyes that give two different perspectives of the reality, and that is capable of unlocking the real three-dimensional structure of the observed world. But the problem is the data do not live in the three-dimensional world. They live in a, let's say, 500-dimensional world.
Okay.
And these high-dimensional spaces, they are in some regards really, really unintuitive, such as, for instance, volume is very much concentrated in its very thin layer around the surface. We have the idea that volume is basically equal, yeah, everywhere, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take a cube in a 10-dimensional space, this is going to have 1,024 corners. Yeah? And these corners are far out and collect lots of volume, despite the fact that they are narrowing down. So our understanding is challenged of these high-dimensional spaces. And the question is, how can sound help in leveraging our understanding? Because sound, you could say, is even lower dimensional. You've got only one dimension, it's time. Everything that is sound is unfolding in time. So you could say there's only one dimension. Mm. But on the other hand, if you look at sonic objects, objets sonore, little sound events, they have so many qualities. Like if you take just a tone like this one or this one, it has a duration, it has an onset, it has a pitch maybe, a brightness, attack time, maybe some internal modulations. And then there's the quality of timbre, that there's a sound color, you could say, which, if you understand it physically, boils down to the harmonic series, the overtones. And this is giving you 10 or 15 more dimensions. So you could say that a sound object is something which is very high dimensional. And now that would give us an opportunity to create objects which are intrinsically high dimensional and organize them in time. And it's an open question how that can really help us to understand these high dimensional spaces in which the data live. Yeah, better. Yeah,
okay.
It's still an unsolved problem, I would say. And on the other hand, what you actually invent as a sonification method depends very much on what information you need. So, in again, you with a sonification, you will not be able to give you the ultimate representation of high-dimensional data. But same as a perspective on an object is just one perspective, and if you've got a complex object like my bag here, perhaps you will need several perspectives from different angles in order to understand that object in full. Same, you would need different auditory perspectives. And I once coined the word peraudect for that, because perspective is spectare is so strong, the seeing is so strong.
Yeah.
So per audere means to listen through the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I argue that you would need several auditory perspectives of the data, giving them from different angles an auditory form, which then in sequence in the brain you can fuse together to gain some higher understanding. And what would be better in order to collect auditory perspectives than interaction? This is how we usually query the world. It's like a firefly making a blip, a small light, and then in this light you can see the world. And by knocking on objects and from different sides and tapping, with each interaction we query one auditory perspective. And so introducing interaction in a process of gradually increasing our knowledge of the world by interacting with the higher dimensional data, that's one cornerstone of my approach of model-based sonification.
Okay, so just like to see if I also understood it correctly, like you think also our bodies can have access, let's say, to this multidimensionality of the data, right? You're just creating different modes and different ways for you to access them.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Then maybe just like a round up question. This has been really, really fascinating. Could you maybe reflect a bit more how throughout this process your understanding also of hearing has changed? Like what have you gained?
Mm-hmm. In talking and thinking about sound and explaining sonifications, I came aware of how deeply rooted this ability to listen is in our neural networks, in our systems. And it's so beautiful and so effortless that we are rarely aware what a marvelous jewel it is. And so usually the first step, if there's a new class in sonification, auditory display, is to make them aware what a wondrous thing it is to be able to listen and to instantly process this auditory world around us. Because we take it for granted, yeah? And we think we need to do some effort to be able to use sonification. But this is all available. So to give you a comparison, in the information technology, artificial intelligence research over the last 5 decades or so, at some time, the idea was, okay, if we can master a machine to play chess, then we have understood intelligence. Yeah? And it turned out that making a chess computer was not too complex, and chess, the machines play chess better than every human nowadays. Yeah? But then the insight was that the real problem is not so much this type of applying rule sets, but the problem of perception. We are perceptual machines. And then there was a notion of pre-rational intelligence. That is the intelligence which is before or below rational thinking. That's the intelligence of making sense of analog signals in the world. And whatever we see, yeah, is an analog signal. It's just pixels with some light intensity. But we don't see that. I look here, I see a door, I see a computer, I see a plant, I see a lamp. Yeah? These objects pop out of the continuous stream of sensory stimuli. And that is 99% of our cognitive capacity. And on top of that, there's a thin layer of rational thinking. Yeah? And I think the same holds true for audio also. So the process of listening to a sequence of instantaneous sound pressure levels, which we call an audio signal, the ups and downs of the sound pressure wave. And all of a sudden, we don't hear that. We hear that somebody is opening a bottle, or somebody is closing a door, or whatever that unit is. And within a split seconds, all the features, like was the door big or from metal or from wood, and whatever, all these features, materials, object sizes, interaction strengths, they instantly occur in our mind. And to really understand that, how that works, and then in the second step, to make use of these resources that we've got in order to better understand complex data is a fascinating field. Yeah? And I believe that the useful path to do it is to inherit what physics is telling us, how sound objects in the world and their sound are being organized. That's basically the application of physics, a physical system to matter. Yeah? That this can be borrowed and carried over to data spaces, so that you define from data something that is capable of making vibrations, and you invent a new physics for this data spaces. It must be a different physics, because the data live in high dimensional spaces. Yeah, so you're very creative. But once you define this physics, you keep the physics constant, and then you allow the user to hit, to squeeze, to interact, to shake your data, and let the miracle happen, so that some sounds come out that the users can then in turn listen to. And it's going to be a signal, and nobody's going to know what the signals are going to be, but it's going to be systematic, and if you've got different data, it's going to sound different. And then we as humans can apply our main resource of being able to learn to understand what these patterns are. And that is, in a nutshell, model-based sonification.
Well, thank you so much. It has been a pleasure.
Yeah. for me as well.
And we hope to see you again.
Yes. I really enjoyed the time here in Utrecht. So wonderful to have this conversation and this interaction here, and to bridging these cultures between the sciences and the humanities. And this is absolutely fantastic.